Welcome into the Locked On Knicks podcast. I'm your host, Gavin Shaw. Alex Wolf is on vacation, so today I am going solo to break down game one of the NBA Finals, and then we get into another one of our player reviews. It's Reggie Bullock's time to shine, the season that he had, the highs, the lows, and who he could potentially be replaced with this offseason. All that and more coming up right now on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now.
Starts without a five. Ewing for the win. Yes.
Up and cuts left. Now fires a three.
And he's good. And he's fouled. It counts. And he makes it.
Anthony for three.
You are Locked On Knicks. This episode is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Download the app and join Alex and I this week, Thursday at 5:30, to get in on the action. Once again, guys, I am Gavin Shaw. Apologies for the long stretch of no episodes we mentioned on Twitter, but for those of you who don't follow us, and you should, it's at Locked On Knicks on Twitter. We mentioned that we had a technical issue with our green room from this week. We spent about an hour and a half talking about Damian Lillard. We're planning on doing about three episodes on that. And it never got properly sent to us. So unfortunately, we didn't get to give you guys that episode. And in turn, we haven't been able to talk the last few days because I was on vacation. I was in upstate New York all weekend. Now Alex is on vacation, interestingly enough, also in upstate New York for the weekend. So yeah, apologies for that. But we are going to get back into the rhythm of things now. Again, today, talking the finals and Reggie Bullock. Tomorrow, I will be joined by the great Benji Ritholtz of the Strickland. I know, one of everyone's favorite guests that we consistently have on, to talk about Obi Toppin season. And then we will knock out another green room, maybe another fun episode or two with a guest talking RJ Barrett or another one of the Knicks' pivotal players. But for now, I'm going to get into the NBA Finals. I debated leading with this because I'm like, all right, there are definitely some people who listen to this podcast who only care about the Knicks. But I feel like there's enough of you out there that are general NBA fans that you'll care a little bit about the NBA Finals. All right. So the Suns win game one, 118-105. And I thought this game one was an interesting bellwether for the series, particularly with Giannis Antetokounmpo back. And I was saying by the end of the Bucks-Hawks series, not that Milwaukee was better without Giannis. I think that's a ridiculous thing to say about someone who has won two MVPs. But that there are diminishing returns to Giannis. And by that, I mean, I think the Bucks' other core pieces fit together and therefore play better, weirdly enough, when he's not on the court. And that's not to say that there aren't aspects of Giannis's game. I mean, his ability to consistently draw double and triple teams around the basket that pay off for Milwaukee. And Giannis has certainly turned himself into a far better passer, had a couple of great ones in this game. Defensively, he certainly makes everyone better. There's no question about that. He is probably the single best help defender in the NBA. And yet, on offense, I can't help but feel that Jrue Holiday is just not the same guy when he's on the court. Holiday was pretty awful on that end of the floor in this game. 10 points, 4 of 14 shooting. I should note, did have 9 assists. Did have 7 rebounds, a couple of moments of fantastic defense in this one. But he was not the same guy we saw at the end of that Hawks series, where he was getting to the rim, he was spinning off of contact and finishing, he was shooting threes. Just does not play with quite the same confidence. And I think it's pretty simple. It's the case of a guy who has been, in his New Orleans career, pretty consistently the number one or number two option, now going to a definitive number three on this Milwaukee team. I mean, sometimes even 4 when Brooke Lopez, who took the same amount of shots as him in 17 less minutes, has it going. And that's hard to do for a guy who isn't, I mean, we talk about why the Brooklyn fit for the three stars was so clean and why the Golden State fit for the three stars was so clean. It's because there was so much shooting there. And Holiday is a fine shooter, but he's not a great one. And at least to me, maybe the stats don't back this up, but watching him in the playoffs, he strikes me as a guy who likes to get his threes in rhythm, likes to get his mid-range game going in rhythm, not necessarily a spot up off the ball, and he'll just kill you, draining open threes. So I think that's issue number one for Milwaukee. Issue number two for Milwaukee is they cannot survive playing Brook Lopez at center. And it seemed like Mike Budenholzer came to that realization throughout this game, in that Lopez was playing, to some extent, exceptionally well offensively, right? I'll cut out the qualifier. There's no some extent about it. He's playing exceptionally well offensively. 17 points, 6 rebounds, 7 of 14 from the field, 3 of 5 from distance. And the Suns didn't really have an answer for him. He was going inside, he was going outside. He was physical. Whenever Ayton got switched into another matchup, Lopez would essentially bully whoever was left on him. And yet he barely played in the second half because he was a minus 17 in terms of plus minus, despite that outstanding offensive game. And it was because Chris Paul and Devin Booker, and this is why the Suns are in the finals, this is why the Suns are who they are, two of the best guards in the NBA at victimizing bigs out on the perimeter. And Phoenix, I mean, you could argue that Milwaukee, I mean, maybe going forward, they'll switch up their defense, despite Budenholzer in general being pretty reticent to change up his strategy on that end. Maybe they'll try to fight over screens a little bit more. But even that's really, really hard to do because Paul and Booker, two of the better shooters in modern NBA history. So then you get those switches, and Paul in particular was just dancing on Lopez. He finished this game with 32 points, 9 assists, 4 rebounds, 12 of 19 from the field, 4 of 7 from 3. Continued right where he left off from the conference finals. And Booker, I mean, didn't have a great shooting game, but went 10 for 10 from the charity stripe, did have 6 assists. And it felt like whenever they wanted, they could absolutely torture and take advantage of Lopez. And Milwaukee didn't really have an answer to it. There just wasn't a lot they could do, despite how good Giannis is in help. And maybe that's something, even though Giannis looked pretty darn athletic on that comeback block, maybe Giannis gets a little bit mobile as he gets healthier as this series goes along. But despite having 4 great defenders around Brook, and Brook nominally in the regular season being a pretty good defender in his own right, it feels like he's unplayable as long as Chris and Book are also on the floor. And that might just be a fact of this series. So if you're Milwaukee, you're sort of left with the notion, okay, all we can really do is go small, right? We have to play Giannis at center. Now comes the problem with that. Milwaukee just simply does not have enough guards or wings to play like that. They have Holiday, they have Middleton, they have Giannis. Those are their definitive two-way guys. They have Tucker, who played 33 minutes in this game. He's, at this point in his career, like the 7 points on 3 of 6 shooting that he had, 1 of 2 from 3, one of the best offensive games he's had all postseason, right? He can hit a corner 3. That is pretty much it for PJ Tucker at this point in his career. Bobby Portis was a revelation last series. In this series, it looks like he's just going to get pulled out and played off the floor, similar to Brook Lopez. Pat Connaughton, he relatively good game. But again, not a guy, at least, that I have a lot of faith in on a night-to-night basis. Brent Forbes, he can fill it up. He's going to get victimized on the other end. Jeff Teague, I'm shocked that they played him 10 minutes. I have a feeling in game 2, he is not going to get on the court. So for Milwaukee, you're pretty much left at, all right, we're going to have to play Giannis, Middleton, and Holiday 40-plus minutes. And Giannis was at 35 in this one. Middleton was at 45, much needed. He was the one buck who really had a great game. Holiday was at 40. That's going to need to go up, I think. They just simply don't have a lot of other options. And they're going to have to grind these guys out and see if they can hold up to it. Because without Dante DiVincenzo, they're just – with DiVincenzo, they're probably a guy short. Now they're at the very least 2 guys short. For the Suns, things, I mean, you flip it, they look really good, and that, to me at least, is primarily because the Suns don't have that issue at all, because DeAndre Ayton has turned himself into a bona fide, I don't know if I want to say one of the 20 most valuable players in the NBA, one of the 25 most valuable players in the NBA, and if you're making that list, you would maybe put him ahead of some guys who, on initial look, you would say, okay, that's ridiculous. He's been good in the playoffs, but he's not that good. But for this Suns team, are there 15 guys in the NBA that they would take over Ayton? I don't really think so. I think he is absolutely the quintessential perfect fit for what Phoenix needs, because he covers up everything defensively now, mobility on the perimeter. And even playing the same drop coverage as Lopez, there's a little bit more athleticism. There's a little bit more foot speed there where that's a bit more palatable. And the other side of that is Milwaukee, unlike Phoenix, just doesn't have the guards to take advantage of if Ayton's going to drop. Holiday's not really doing a Trae Young impression and just nailing floater after floater. Middleton has a little bit of that in his game, but it's not really his bread and butter. And because of that, Phoenix can play Ayton 39 minutes. And the other really big swing factor that Ayton pushes in the Suns' direction in this series is that I thought Milwaukee had a chance to just absolutely physically dominate Phoenix on the boards. We saw stretches of it against Brooklyn. We saw stretches of it against Atlanta. All the size they bring in that starting lineup. I mean, particularly Giannis and Lopez, but look at PJ Tucker. I mean, he's built. He's really strong. Middleton, super long. Holiday, one of the two or three strongest point guards in the entire NBA. They're going to crash. They're going to be aggressive. And my worry as a Suns fan coming into this series was that they might be able to overwhelm Phoenix with their physicality a little bit. That just, it was not the case in this game one, and that was because Ayton was a monster, 19 rebounds, skying through traffic, using his big frame, using his quick feet, and getting to a whole bunch of balls. And then offensively, 8 for 10, 22 points. There was a stat out there. Obviously, he just missed the 2020 game, but there was a pretty insane statistic. I mean, everyone saw the one where he was, I think, the first player since Tim Duncan to have 15 and 15 in his finals debut. But I'll give you another one. 22 points, 19 rebounds on 80% shooting in an NBA Finals game. Keep in mind, this is not in your first ever NBA Finals game. This is in every NBA Finals game ever. The players to do that all time. 22 points, 19 boards, 80% shooting. Bill Russell, Wilt Chamberlain, DeAndre Ayton. But let's take our first break. We will come back and we will talk Reggie Bullock right after the break, the season that was and the future for him on the Knicks after this. All right, guys, it's one of our favorites. We are talking about Built Bar, available this week only from July 6th to July 9th. Built Bar has a new flavor, the Grasshopper Cookie. What does it taste like? This is Built Bar's version of the classic thin mint cookie. All the flavor without that sugar. 150 calories, 17 grams of protein. That's a ridiculous number. And only 5 grams of sugar. Did you know that Built Bar has a variety of delicious flavors? It's not just the new Grasshopper cookie. Their full timers are great for everyone. Coconut, cherry barcia, double chocolate, strawberry. Oh man, strawberry is good. Cookies and cream, and German chocolate. If you haven't tried all the flavors, they have a great deal for you. You can get a mixed box where you'll get 2 of each of the 9 flavors. And then from that point going forward, you'll know exactly what you want. Not only are the Built Bar flavors the best tasting, but they're healthy too. Check out the stats. 17 to 18 grams of protein, calories only 130 to 180, only 4 to 5 grams of sugar, and only 4 to 5 grams net carbs. Amazing flavors, all tasty, all healthy. Order today and get the Grasshopper Cookie or Raspberry or whatever you like. Built Bar is the official protein bar, I found this cool, of the U.S. track and field team. Isn't that kind of neat? Go to Built.com and use promo code LOCK15 and you'll get 15% off your first order. Use promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at Built.com. All right, guys, today on Road to the Finals, our NBA playoffs coverage is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. And at 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, we can all enjoy the games a little bit more this season. All right, so we got into our playoff coverage talking Suns-Bucks Game 1. I'm very, very excited, very ready to be disappointed if that goes Milwaukee's way. But let's get into what you're really here for, some Knicks talk. So it's time for Reggie Bullock in the playoff review section. It's his 7th year in the NBA. He is now 30 years old, and he is a free agent. So what's kind of the case for and against bringing him back next season? Well, he averaged 11 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, rounding up on a couple of those, on 44% from the field, 41% from 3, 91% from the foul line. So pretty ridiculous true shooting numbers for Reggie Bullock, one of the more efficient players in the NBA this season. And he became a different guy after the All-Star break. Before the stop, he averaged 8.5 points per game on 37% from three. After the break, final 25-30 games of the year, 13 points per on 43% shooting. And it was something that we talked about a lot in the pod. Apparently Julius Randle talked to him at one point around the All-Star break, and it was something Tibbs was kind of encouraging him to do too, and said, hey man, when you're open, you got to just start firing. And that seemingly unlocked something in Reggie. He clearly had a new level of confidence in the second half of the year. And I think people underestimate that as a factor with NBA players, but with shooters in particular. They're about as good as their coach allows them to be and their teammates allow them to be. And by that, I mean, how empowered are your shooters? Are you giving a guy like Duncan Robinson a chance to run off screens and fire from deep threes? Are you literally saying to a guy like Duncan Robinson, you will be running laps and doing pushups if we see you pass up even semi-open threes? And I can say from personal experience, as someone who's primary skill on a basketball court is shooting it, that I am a much, much better player when I feel like my teammates, usually my friends playing pickup, trust me to take a lot of shots. And if I miss, they're going to say, hey, take that every time. That's a great look. And I'm sure everyone who's ever played pickup basketball has had that experience. You turn into a completely different player when you're firing with confidence and not getting discouraged every time you miss. And to me, it was as simple as that with Reggie Bullock in the second half of the year. And he became the best version of himself, capped by his game of the season, a 24-point, 4-rebound, 3-assist, 2-steal, 1-block masterpiece in arguably the Knicks' biggest win over the season, that 106-100 victory in L.A. over the Clippers with Kawhi and Paul George both going at it. It was the apex of this Knicks team. It got me dreaming of a second round appearance, maybe a competitive second round series for the Knicks. And it was the end of a high for Reggie. It was the last game and the peak of a 15 consecutive game stretch where he scored in double figures. It included 5 made triples at that point in the season, courtesy of Jonathan Macri. It was the 14th time he had made at least 4 in a game. The Knicks at that point had gotten 9-5 in those games, 4 of the losses coming by single digits. And I think Macri made a good point in his newsletter when he was talking about this. Something I certainly noticed. The Knicks a lot of times went as Reggie went. When he was firing away from distance, it completed their starting lineup and gave you an indicator. I mean, this is touching on our last segment a little bit, about why you would potentially want an upgrade in that spot, because it shows you what high-level shooting and having one guy on the floor who is a constant deadly threat, absolutely cannot leave behind the arc type of guy, does for their offense. And it was an element that in the playoffs absolutely dissipated. Reggie in the postseason, 9 points, 3 boards, 1 assist, 39% from the field, 35% from three, 80% from free throws. Again, some generous rounding up there. To give Reggie a little bit of a break, it was a small sample size, obviously, because the series only went 5 games. Reggie had not had a lot of previous playoff experience, only playing 27 minutes over 4 previous playoff games. A lot of guys are not great in their first postseason, but I would say his struggles were pretty predictable based on what we saw from Reggie during the regular season. Because if you sort of locked and trailed him and just didn't really let him get shots off on a consistent basis, he was going to have a lot of issues. And he certainly wasn't unreliable in terms of, I mean, as that Clippers game kind of suggests, he was really, really good in some really big games for the Knicks. But he was not extremely consistent throughout the season. And ultimately, the higher level shooters in the NBA do one of two things. Either they're so elite, like the Duncan Robinsons of the world, that you're gonna sort of like live with their off shooting nights and say, all right, like look, Duncan went 0-7 tonight, probably cost us the game. There's a decent chance he comes back and hits 9 threes and we win the next playoff game. You could say that about Joe Harris, but even Joe Harris really, really struggled in that Nets Bucks series. And that's sort of the issue with one-dimensional shooters. And someone like Harris is even quite a bit more multifaceted than Reggie Bullock. When the shot isn't falling, They become an aggregate zero. They become someone that you can hide a Trae Young on. And all of a sudden, they're a real weak point, even with someone like Reggie, who I neglected to mention so far, did fantastic work for the Knicks defensively all year and was arguably their best perimeter defender all season. Certainly their most consistent, I would say. But you in the playoffs, you need someone who, if they're going to be run off the line, they can make the next play. They can do something with the ball. And that's where someone like Jay Crowder really comes into handy for a team like Phoenix. See, we're bringing this full circle. The finals talk was relevant. And Bullock, as useful as he is, as much of his absolute steal as he was on his contract last season, is not that guy. So would it be worth the Knicks replacing him? We'll talk about that next on Locked On Knicks. But first, a quick break to talk about one of our all-time favorite sponsors. It is, of course, BetOnline, which is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track it all at BetOnline. You can get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all your UFC/MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. So don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit if you use our promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, guys, we are back. Third and final segment on the Locked On Knicks podcast. You can subscribe anywhere you get podcasts. I haven't asked in a long time, so I'll ask right now. Please go leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. You can make any disparaging comments you feel about me, you feel about Alex. Leave the guests out of it. They're doing us a big favor, working for free. But yeah, go after us if you need to. But yeah, just throw us 5 stars. Anywho, Reggie Bullock. All right. Should the Knicks replace him this offseason? I don't necessarily think he should not be back on the team next year. I don't think he should be a starter on next year's team. I think we saw the ceiling of that unit this year. Granted, you throw Reggie on the Lakers, you throw Reggie in there for Mikal Bridges on the Suns, you throw him in there, this is an even better example, you throw him in there for Pat Connaughton on the Bucks, all of a sudden, yeah, he can be a starter on a finals team. The Knicks, unfortunately, do not have the supporting pieces to support him being a starter on a really good team because his role is too significant for his skill set, is the best way I can phrase it. So how can the Knicks upgrade? Let's run through some of the options. DeMar DeRozan, he's actually a guy, if we ever get a chance to release the green room from last week, praying for some luck there. We talked about DeMar DeRozan quite a bit as a potential option for the Knicks, unless I'm losing my mind and it was a week before. It's possible. It's all kind of blending together in the midst of this offseason. But DeRozan would be an obvious upgrade offensively, right? High-level creator, incredibly skilled, very, very crafty, one of the single best mid-range scorers in the entire NBA. Not the shooter that Reggie Bullock is. And yet, despite that, I think because of the attention that he draws, he would certainly be an upgrade, especially in the playoffs. Because you cannot put Trae Young on DeMar DeRozan in the postseason. Granted, you cannot put DeMar DeRozan on Trae Young on the other end, like the Knicks did with Reggie Bullock to really bother Trae in the I won't say really bother, but to bother Trae to some extent in the later games of that series. DeMar, though, you can make the case there are some diminishing returns there because he is not a great shooter. I wouldn't rule him out for the Knicks. It would depend on the number, but maybe not a perfect fit because you really at some part of that starting lineup you need an elite shooter in there. Lonzo Ball has turned himself into something of an elite shooter. I know what most of you are saying. Wouldn't Lonzo be your starting point guard? Not necessarily. He was more of an off-the-ball guy his 2 years in New Orleans, first with Jrue Holiday, and then last year with Point Zion. And he turned himself into a good enough shooter on high enough volume that you could subsist that way and be pretty good. Next year, if the Knicks got Lonzo, I would hope that, ideally Emmanuel Quickley, but if not, Derrick Rose was your starting point guard. Lonzo was playing off the ball. And he's big enough and strong enough that you can use him and RJ as sort of an interchangeable 2-3. Doesn't really matter who's guarding who on the other end. They're pretty similar in size. And RJ's a little bit stronger. So RJ probably would guard threes. But Lonzo, despite some inconsistency defensively, would be a real asset on that end. real asset as a shooter. And again, unlike Reggie Bullock, not that he's great attacking a closeout, but he's an upgrade in that capacity. Certainly far, far better as a passer and a ball mover. There's a case to be made that Lonzo would be a pretty significant upgrade. Is a restricted free agent. Is the price worth it for the Knicks? I have a feeling it's going to be too high. We will see on that front. Victor Oladipo, someone that it feels like could potentially be had on the cheap. I have a feeling he is going to ultimately stay in Miami, assuming they strike out on the Kawhi Leonards of the world or trading for someone of that ilk. But he's certainly a fascinating option. I mean, pretty much what you want, right? At his peak, a Reggie Bullock type shooter, a Reggie Bullock type defender who also brings nuclear athleticism and ability to absolutely torch people off the dribble. We have not seen that player for almost three years now. So who knows? Who knows the Victor Oladipo? How much do you want to pay that guy? Norman Powell, an upgrade, not one that I think is worth the price. Kelly Oubre, I would hesitate to say is even an upgrade. If he is at his peak as a shooter, and we've seen the rumors that the Knicks are interested in him, which is about 35% on decent volume in Phoenix, you can make the case, right? Because he's a lot more athletic around the rim, defensively far more inconsistent than Reggie, but a similar ceiling if he sort of gets his feet under him and potentially has a career year with the Knicks and in the Knicks infrastructure. Last guy I had here in terms of potential free agents is Duncan Robinson, who is also restricted, but just a better overall shooter. Little bit of a downgrade defensively. I think, if anything, this season he was a little bit worse than he was last year. I'm not pulling up any stats. That's pure Gavin brain memory. But yeah, I would not invest super duper heavily in Duncan Robinson just because the version of Reggie Bullock we saw in the second half of last season was like 90% of the Duncan Robinson experience. So I don't think it'd be worth paying Robinson a whole lot more money, even though I think Robinson, with his consistency and just how elite he is as a shooter, could maybe open up a little bit more for you on offense. But I think it's probably not worth dipping into the bank for that kind of signing. Who are the guys in the draft you could replace him with? I'm just going to go through some of the top wings that are feasibly available to the Knicks, either if they trade up or if they stay with their current two picks. Keon Johnson, nuclear athlete, defensively could come in from day one and be solid. Offensively, just is not ready. Is not ready for that kind of responsibility. Franz Wagner, one of the better options on this list. Great three-point shooter, really high-level attacking closeouts. Not really an elite athlete, but at 6'9", just supersized at the wing spot, long, and it sounds like I'm just saying this because he's white, but he's a pretty crafty finisher. All right, Corey Kispert, not that crafty, but another elite shooter. Strong defender. My whole thing with Kispert is you'd be drafting him and presumably having to trade up for him. And then you're paying him maybe, definitely less than what Reggie Bullock would make. But the whole premise of letting Reggie leave and taking and replacing him with a draft pick. Jesus, I'm losing my voice, Alex. This is why you can't go on vacation. But the whole premise of replacing Reggie Bullock with a draft pick would be that not only are you getting a cheaper player, but you're getting one with a higher ceiling. And Kispert's ceiling is higher than Reggie Bullock's. But I think it's more like Joe Harris than Klay Thompson. Like, he's not going to be working people off the dribble, like, time after time. He's not going to be, for my money, one of the greatest shooters of all time. He's going to be a really, really good shooter and a good overall scorer and a solid defender. But I don't think he's changing your life. And I think with Kispert, you're the best case scenario. You're not running into the same problems you are with Reggie in terms of him getting played off the floor in the playoffs. But that's the best case scenario, and I think that'll take a couple of years to come to fruition. Jalen Johnson, monster athlete, monster upside. Total non-shooter, though. Really tough fit in the Knicks starting lineup. If he falls to you at 19, I think you have to take him just as a talent play. But I think he would more likely be a super sub for his first couple of years until that jumper came around. Versus your starting three next season. Moses Moody, another guy who you're going to have to trade up for in all likelihood, but to me, one of the best options on this list, true 3-and-D talent, who I know there were some people, just because of his statistical profile and what he did later in the season, who were arguing against him having like a super high ceiling, but he is still very, very young. Him and Wagner are probably the two guys on this list that I would want the most. Moody, I think you could justify in taking in that he gives you a lot of what Reggie gives you from day one, and he could eventually develop into quite a bit more. Chris Duarte would sort of be like the pick at 21 if you're saying, all right, we're going to allocate money somewhere else. Maybe you're throwing Kyle Lowry or Chris Paul a ton of money to be your point guard next season. We want a cheap replacement for Reggie Bullock. Duarte is that guy, 24 years old, ready-made, elite shooter, really strong defender with a high steal rate. Also a good three-level scorer, though he doesn't get fouled very often. I think he pretty much brings you what Reggie Bullock brings you from day one in a best-case scenario. Obviously, there's some nuances defensively that he would have to get on track with. I don't think he's a 43% shooter like Reggie was in the second half of the season, but I think he gives you a lot of the same stuff, ready-made at a cheaper price. Final guy, Zaire Williams, different type of player, more of a project, but interesting potential for sure. All right, with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. Again, please do tune in tomorrow because I will have a great conversation with Benji Ritholtz on Obi Toppin. Until next time, peace out. Enjoy the rest of your week, and remember to subscribe to Locked On Knicks if you aren't already. Follow me at Gavin Shaw, Alex at Alex Wolf, and yeah, go on iTunes, leave us a nice review. We really, really appreciate it. It makes it a lot easier for us to do the podcast 5 days a week, which I promise going forward, we'll be more reliable about doing. Until next time, peace out. Talk to you soon.